Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is your new Comics Wednesday episode for August 19th, 2020. We'll be talking about six books that hit your stands today, and then I'll give you a rundown on some of the other titles you might want to be on the lookout for. So I'm going to start with Harley Quinn number 75. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I will say that I haven't read the Harley Quinn title since Jimmy and Amanda. So, and I didn't even finish their run. I think I read up to about maybe issue 15 or so, and then I was just Harleyed out. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I, at one point, read every single appearance of Harley in the DC universe. That would be nearly impossible to do now, but this was back in like 2012, I want to say. Maybe 2013, when it certainly was possible, but it's one of those things like when you do a watermelon eating contest or something like that, and you eat so much of one thing or you drink so much of one thing and then you can't stand it anymore. That's kind of how I feel about Harley, and I've never recovered. And it very well may be that I wouldn't have liked her as a character anyway, but that really turned me off. So I say all that to say, yes, I haven't been reading Harley at all. I've heard good things about the title since Sam Humphries took over, that he's been doing a good job keeping that irreverence that Jimmy and Amanda brought to the title, and being that this was her last issue for now, because we know that DC's not going to go too long without publishing a Harley title, I thought I would give this a try and kind of see where we're at. So, as I mentioned, it's written by Sam Humphries. There's a lot of really, really great artists on this. We have Sami Basri, Nicola Scott, Emanuela Lupacchino, Ray McCarthy, Roman Villalobos, Gozi Ukazu, and Joe Quinones. We've also got Hi-Fi, Annette Kwok, and Tamra Bonvillon on colors, with Dave Sharp on letters. And just to kind of give you an idea of what the story is about, it's basically Harley at a roast. So, you know, people are going to come up and, you know, make fun of her and, you know, say terrible things and all in good fun, right? So that's why there are so many different artists on it. You get, I think Sami Basri is the one that's doing kind of the main, the art on the main story, if you will, the framework story. And then you've got Nicola Scott and Emanuela Lupacchino and Ray McCarthy and everybody else doing these other, illustrating these other stories where people are going up to roast Harley and they're relaying stories and memories of her. So I'm not going to say anything more about the story than that, because I don't want to give away anything. I don't know if I would be giving away anything, because as I said, I haven't been reading Harley, so I'm not sure how this ties into the story that Humphries has been telling. What I will say is the art from everybody is absolutely exceptional. It's really, really beautiful art. And I especially want to call out the colorists. Hi-Fi and Annette Kwok and Tamra Bonvillon do an incredible job. Coloring is very consistent, I'll say, throughout. I mean, there's a little variation here and there from story to story, but it's all bright and fun and really has that feel that you would expect a Harley Quinn book to have. So I did enjoy the issue, as much as, you know, I don't really care for Harley Quinn. And I was left wondering how much it ties into what Humphries has been doing. Not enough that I want to go back and read any of the previous issues. But I did feel like it was a good representation of who Harley Quinn is now. And I think anybody who's a fan or anybody who's been reading the title will probably love it. So it's a great cover too. The main cover by Guillaume March says, Harley Quinn, a roast, a Joker war tie-in, a series finale. This comic has it all. And yeah, it is really fun. As far as the Joker war tie-in, that's actually a second backup story in the back. That is also written by Sam Humphries, but the art is not by any of the artists in the front part of the book. Rather, it's by Riley Rosmo. And with colors by Even Placencia and letters by Dave Sharp. And, you know, I've said before, I'm not a big fan of Riley's art. It's not clean enough for me. It's a little too messy. It's a little too stylized. That being said, I have seen it work before. Like, I think his art technique and his art that he did for the Martian Manhunter series that Steve Orlando wrote was really good, and it suited that series very well. You know, Martian Manhunter being a shape changer and such, and you know, aliens and all that. It did eventually grow on me for that series, but here it just feels like a muddled mess, especially because there's very few panels. There's a lot of montage pages, and even the panels that are there are odd shapes, or they're positioned strangely on the page. And it just, I mean, if you're a fan of Riley Rossmo's art, you'd probably be over the moon. You'll just absolutely love this, because it is like his art distilled down, you know, out of control, no holds barred. But I couldn't stand it, especially because it does feel so messy, and it does feel just images on top of images, cluttered and hard to follow. And I just didn't like it. So as far as the reason for the story, it's Punchline and Harley fighting. And so I feel like you got like two pages of story that you sort of needed in the beginning, maybe one. And then you got the last page that was important. And the middle is just Riley Rossmo just drawing whatever he feels like drawing and going crazy with different Harley images. And you really only need the first page of the story and the last page of the story. It's a tangential tie-in at best for Joker War. This easily can be skipped. Certainly don't go out and buy Harley Quinn number 75 if the only reason you're buying it is because it says it's a Joker War tie-in. It's inconsequential to what's going on in the Joker War, so don't buy it for that reason. If you love Riley Rossmo art, definitely buy it. Definitely buy it, because you are going to absolutely love this. Like I said, it's him going absolutely crazy with his style of art, and so if you like that style, you're going to love this. I mean, it is just the most Rossmo of Rossmo art, and I do respect him for that, for just going absolutely nuts. And I recognize how much work it is, and how it really works for people that enjoy that style of art. But that's not me. So I did not enjoy it. But the first story I did very much enjoy, and I didn't hate this. I just recognize that it's not for me. It's Rossmo getting to show off, and he takes full advantage of that. So, all right, let me go ahead and move on to the next book I'm going to talk about. Justice League number 51. It's written by writer Jeff Loveness. We have pencils by Robson Rocha. Inks are by Daniel Enriquez. Colors are by Romulo Fajardo Jr. And letters are by Tom Napolitano. There's a really cool main cover here by Philip Tan that I think is pretty awesome. And we get a clue right away what the story's about with the words on the cover: in the grip of Black Mercy madness. So for those that aren't familiar, Black Mercy is a flower, a parasite that showed up in, I think it was Superman Annual number 9. It's a very famous cover and a very famous story by Alan Moore. What do you get for the man who has everything? And I think it was, I want to say it was Mongol that sent it to Superman for his birthday, and it attached to him. And basically what happens is this parasite, this Black Mercy flower, attaches to you, and it feeds off you, and you provide nourishment for it. And in return, it creates a fantasy world for you, an illusion. You're kind of comatose, but in your mind, you think you're living out, you know, whatever your ideal world is. So for Superman, that was Krypton never exploded, and he had a wife, and he had kids, and he was living as a productive citizen of Krypton. So, again, very, very famous story by Alan Moore. And here we have the Justice League about to deal with Black Mercy. So I know at the end of the Cy Spurrier arc that Justice League was still in space and they're heading back toward Earth. It's interesting that in the Justice League right now, they are off of Earth. I don't know exactly the thinking for that editorial wise, because Scott Snyder's Dark Knight Death Metal is going on right now. And obviously a lot of the Justice League, or all the Justice League really, are involved with that. But that's sort of set in the future. So I guess in order to avoid confusion, that's why these Justice League stories that have been coming out recently have been, so you could think of them as out of continuity. So putting them out in space sort of makes sense from that perspective. So they're flying through space, they're headed back toward Earth, and they get hijacked, and they end up at a planet that they weren't expecting, and they investigate, and things happen. Again, I don't want to spoil, but Black Mercy is behind a lot of it. So I did enjoy this issue. What I thought was strange, so for about the first half of the issue, it felt really different because we're getting pretty much no dialogue from any of the characters. We're just seeing some really great art by Robson Rocha, and everything is dialogue boxes, and we're not sure who it is that's speaking. So, you know, last time I read a story like that was in Detective Comics 1000, the Arkham Knight story by Peter J. Tomasi, and then it come to find out it was the Arkham Knight herself who was kind of our narrator. Here we do find out, just like that story, we do find out at the end who is narrating. I didn't feel quite as lost as I felt when I was reading that Detective Comics story, that Arkham Knight story, the first time. But it is a little strange to see just all these beautiful images and have these dialogue boxes sort of carry the story when we're not sure who it is that's speaking. So it felt a little disconnected. I don't know if that was exactly the right choice or what the reasoning was for that, but the art itself is beautiful. And we see some really iconic images of all the heroes, mostly focusing on the Trinity, you know, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. But we do get a few of the Flash and Green Lantern and what have you, and some of these images are very iconic. We get a new image from Crisis on Infinite Earths 8, where the Flash is running against the antimatter cannon. We get a new image of a Batman about to be struck by the Omega beams, like in Final Crisis, and we get a new image of Superman battling Doomsday from Superman 75. So the art is really, really fantastic. And there's also a full page spread when the Justice League comes out of hyperspace or what have you, and they think they're supposed to be on Earth, but they're actually somewhere else. And we see the planet, and we see some other things in orbit, and that is just such an amazing image. So again, the art is done really, really well across the board. The colors are beautiful. They're primary where they need to be, and then they're sort of alien blues and purples when they need to be. And I'm very curious to see where this goes next. The one thing, the only nitpick I would have about it is you kind of get the feeling early on that it's going to be a little Batman-centric, just because when you first see one of those iconic images that I'm talking about, there's something different about Batman as opposed to Superman and Wonder Woman. And I noticed it right away, and I turned the page because I was kind of wondering, okay, so I know this has to do with Black Mercy, so are we already seeing some alternate reality, or what exactly are we seeing? And then as I read, you know, along a little more, I realized, no, we're not. Or I don't think we are. I think we're still in like regular reality, and it made me flip back to that first image of Batman, so that I could look again. Did I see that right? Is that how it's supposed to be? Why is it that way? Because it doesn't look quite like it should. And this is on the very first page. And so that immediately in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, uh-oh, is this going to be a Batman-centric story? I mean, I don't know if Jeff Loveness has ever... I know he's written Superman before. I think he wrote the... Was it the Dark Multiverse Death of Superman special, which was really, really good. I think... I want to say he wrote that. But I'm not sure if he's ever gotten to work on Justice League or if he's ever gotten to work on Batman. So you can't blame somebody for the first time they work on Justice League. Well, you know, I have this Batman story. Let me adapt it for the Justice League. Or maybe it is a Justice League story, but it just happens to focus on Batman. I mean, it's okay for Justice League stories to focus on one character or another. It's just, man, we're getting a lot of Batman lately between Joker War and between Dark Knight Death Metal, which is supposed to be a Wonder Woman story, but it's just filled to the brim with Batman. And now we've got this, where that very first image just, again, it planted a seed in my mind that made me think, oh, this is a Batman story. And then when you get to the last page, and you'll know what I mean when you see it, you can't help but think, yep, Batman story. So hopefully it's not just a Batman story, and we're going to see some other members of the Justice League kind of face some of their iconic stuff, and we'll get into some of their history and what have you. I hope that's the case. If this ends up being a Batman story, I mean, if it's done well, I'll enjoy it. But I'd be lying if I didn't say I wouldn't hope for somebody else. You know, a Jon Stewart story, a Wonder Woman story would be fantastic, a Superman story. But I don't know. We'll see. So it is an interesting story. We know it's only going to be two parts because, again, this is issue 51, and we know issue 53 starts the five-issue crossover with Death Metal that's going to be written by Joshua Williamson. Two more issues of some sort of continuity-free, you know, I won't say out of continuity because very well could be canon, and I would expect it to be. But it's just not tying in very tightly to what's going on with the rest of the DC Universe right now. Just like Cy Spurrier stories did not, nor did Robert Venditti. So nice change of pace. You can just pick this up and read it, and you don't have to worry about what's going on in Deceased or Death Metal or You're the Villain or any of that stuff. You can just pick it up and read it on its own. So I do recommend it. And if you're a Batman fan, it looks like it's going to be a must-read. So... great job by the whole creative team there. All right, next up, I have one of three Marvel books I'm going to talk about. It is Captain Marvel number 20. It's written by Kelly Thompson. We have pencils by Corey Smith, inks by Adriano Di Benedetto, colors by Tamara Bonvillain, and letters by Clayton Cowles. So... this is an Empire tie-in, and when I decided I was going to read Captain Marvel 20, now, I bought the first couple issues of Kelly Thompson's Captain Marvel. Hadn't read Captain Marvel in a while. I did read Life of Captain Marvel by Margaret Stoll, and I read Kelly Pseudoconic's Captain Marvel, and I read Margaret Stoll's Captain Marvel, and like I said, I bought the first couple issues of Kelly Thompson's run, and read the first two, and I thought they were fine, but then I kind of fell off, and then, but I was still buying them, and I know, like, there was a new character introduced named Star, and there was a dark version of Captain Marvel and everything, so I've been interested, and I've been continuing to buy it, but it's just one of those titles that I haven't read in a while, so I thought, well, I'm not going to get caught up on all 20 issues, but let me just jump back in and read this issue, and kind of see where it's at and see if I should still be buying it, even though I haven't had time to read it. So I went ahead and picked it up. And as soon as I saw the cover, I was like, oh, super cool. Like, it's Captain Marvel. It's War Machine. It's this girl, Hazard, who I think Hazard, or is it Hazmat? Let me see. I think it's right here in the, yeah, Hazmat and Spider-Woman. And they're all in like this, this green and black type costumes, like Kree, classic Kree colors, and I see right across the top Empire. So I'm like, great, this is an Empire tie-in. I was planning on staying far, far away from Empire. I had no desire to read any of it, and it wasn't because I thought it was going to be bad, But, you know, it kind of got delayed, and these Marvel events lately seem to be so convoluted and bloated, and I just wanted to stay away. You know, I did the Hunt for Wolverine thing and felt like I read a bunch of titles that I didn't need to read and spent money I didn't need to spend, and it didn't really come of anything. So I just didn't want to get interested in Empire. So that being said, I've heard a lot of good things about it. And when I saw Empire, like I said, on the front of Captain Marvel, I'm like, oh man, do I really want to read this? But I'd already committed to reading it and giving you guys my thoughts. So I'm like, all right, let me just go ahead and give it a read. And open up the front cover, and I see it's part of the Accused storyline, and it's part 3. But this is one of those times where I'm really grateful that Marvel does the little recaps, right? And there's 3 paragraphs right here inside the front cover, and it gave me kind of a rundown and told me everything I needed to know. Captain Marvel's now the Supreme Accuser, so, you know, that if you're only a fan of the movies or not familiar with Kree, that's Ronan the Accuser, right? That's what his role was. Lee Pace played him in the Captain Marvel movie. And so she's the Supreme Accuser. She has the hammer. And it talks about the fight that's going on right now between the new Empire and the alien Kotati, which is basically what the Empire event is about. And tells us what we need to know. Emperor Hulkling. And there was a mission for Carol to go find who had destroyed the sanctuary city of the Kree Skrulls, and when Carol confronted that soldier, whose name is Laura L, she actually found out. Carol found out that through the hammer that this Lori L person is Carol's sister, actually. So that was interesting. And then because of that, Carol brought her sister to Earth, and then went to Doctor Strange and had Doctor Strange use his powers to change the hammer. The hammer is the weapon of the Supreme Accuser, to change it from one hammer to 4. He basically divided the hammer by 4 because she doesn't believe that the hammer, which is, you know, very powerful and also has not sentience, but it does have kind of a will of its own. She feels like it's being, in her words, shady. So she thought by dividing it up and giving the other 3 hammers to her most trusted people, that maybe she could see more clearly, right? Like if the hammer's being wielded by 4 people that she trusts that can see the truth, that maybe that will help her see the truth. So those are the 4 that we saw on the cover that I mentioned. Spider-Woman, Hazmat, and War Machine, James Rhodes, and then obviously she keeps one as well. So again, without knowing anything about Empire, and without knowing anything that's been going on, I feel like I'm caught up enough by reading that little synopsis there, and then we get into the story. Really, really great art by Corey Smith, and I have to say that they're all great characters. Like, I like Captain Marvel. I love the voice and the characterization that Kelly Thompson brings to her. She's not quite as snarky as maybe Kelly Sue wrote her. And she's probably a little less vulnerable emotionally than Margaret Stoll. Like a little less emotionally... a little less emotional depth, maybe, than Margaret Stoll brought to the character. So it is a unique voice, you know, in that Kelly Thompson is not, you know, trying to write her the same way Kelly Sue did or Margaret Stoll did. She's given her own kind of spin on the character, but it feels very authentic. And I love the voice and the tone and kind of the dialogue, all of it. Like, just, she's got Carol down really, really well. Very authentic Carol Danvers. And I could say the same thing for the way she writes Spider-Woman. She gives her a little more sense of humor than you might see in the current Spider-Woman title that's going on right now. Very authentic with James Rhodes. I'm not that familiar with this Hazmat character, so I'm not sure, but she seems fine as well. So I say all that to say this. None of those were my favorite character in the issue. Like, Kelly Thompson nails all of them. Their characterization and their dialogue and everything feels perfect. But I feel like Laurie L., Carol's sister, she steals the show. She gives her a lot of fish-out-of-water humor, which can be kind of old and tired. And, you know, it's kind of a trope. But, you know, here she is on Earth. She's not that familiar with things. And she definitely plays the straight man, because people are using slang and everything, and she doesn't really get it. And it's just really, really funny. Like, she just, like, immediately, I just really liked her. So credit to Kelly Sue, or Kelly Thompson, rather, for doing a great job of giving this new character a unique voice. And, yeah, I just thought she did a spectacular job. So other than that, the issue has a lot of action. And again, ties into the Empire story, but we still have enough subplot and things going on that don't necessarily have to do with Empire, or might. I don't know enough about Empire to know, but we do have a couple of different things going on here. And I will say, it does make me want to read Empire, which is what these tie-ins are supposed to do, right? Like, you're supposed to pick up a tie-in and go, oh, I read that, and now, I mean, this is phase three, according to the checklist in the back, and I'm like, man, I kind of want to know what's going on. I'm not going to. It's too much. I'm too far behind. But I could see myself picking up an Empire trade, because it's a lot of issues. It would be pretty big. It might be several trades, or maybe there's going to be a hardcover collection that collects it all. And if I could do that and read it all and have it all in one volume, and not have to go, okay, I got to read this, and then, okay, what's next? Let me find the issue and, you know, jump through all those hoops. If I just had it all together bound in one volume, I might be willing to read it, because it is interesting. I did enjoy it. So credit to Kelly Thompson for making this issue accessible to somebody who hasn't been reading Empire and hasn't read Captain Marvel for like 18 issues. But it was a lot of fun. It was a whole lot of fun. And I hope that Laurie L. hangs around and is a supporting character for Captain Marvel going forward. I will find time to go back and read all of Kelly Thompson's Captain Marvel and get caught up, because this is a really fun title. All right, up next we have Spider-Woman. You know, I was just mentioning the Spider-Woman title. It's written by Carla Pacheco. Art is by Pierre Perez. Colors by Frank Deramata. And letters by Travis Lanham. This is issue 3, and I've been enjoying what Carla Pacheco has been doing with Spider-Woman. I think, you know, like I said, she's not quite as humorous as she is in the Captain Marvel title that we just read, but she does feel authentic, and it really does feel like Carla Pacheco is adding a lot to Jessica Drew and her mythos. I will say that lately Jessica has felt younger to me than she has in a while. I mean, I'm kind of used to, you know, the Jessica that had been around for a long time and had been a private detective and had eventually, you know, retired because she was tired of living that life. And she always felt to me like she was in her, like, late 40s at that time. And, you know, that was in the 80s. And now here we are. It's at 40. God, the 1980 was 40 years ago. Holy mackerel. 30 years ago, let's say, 1989. And she's much younger now. She just comes across as younger, which, you know, it's fine, but it's just a different tone and a different Jessica Drew than I'm used to. And so to see Carla Pacheco being so additive to the mythos, and I can't really say much more than that because I don't want to give anything away, but the things that she's doing here are big things for Spider-Woman. Like, and I would expect this stuff to stick, because why wouldn't it? I mean, I know it's comics and you can throw some of this stuff out, but the things that she's adding are so big that, you know, it's one of those things like, she'll never be the same, and you take it all as hyperbole, but that's really the case here. And I like what she's doing because it does feel so additive, and it's opening up new storylines and new possibilities and new supporting characters for Spider-Woman. So, really, really interesting. So if you haven't been reading it, not to get too spoilery, Issue one started off, and Jessica was hiring her skills out as a private bodyguard, and she finds out that the person that she was hired by actually took away her healing factor because his daughter is suffering from something that that the same illness that Jessica was suffering from when she was a very little child. And so by doing this, he hoped to study and kind of experiment on Jessica to find how her healing factor worked and restore it. And in doing so, he would find a cure for his own daughter. So that's kind of what's happened in the first couple of issues. And now in this issue, we see them sort of continuing that attempt to find a cure, but things don't go quite the way they want. They're kind of being besieged from multiple people, and we're not sure what their deal is. And so they have to kind of make a break for it and look for a change of scenery. And where they go ties into Jessica's past, and that's where we're starting to see that there are things about Jessica's past that she didn't even know, and they're very big things. And so, again, don't want to spoil, but the last page is a big cliffhanger. So anxiously awaiting issue 4. The art by Pierre Perez is top notch. The colors are a little muted for what I would expect in a very traditional superhero comic by Frank Deramata. I mean, they still work. I just wish that it was a little more primary. It's not that it's muddy or anything is unclear. I just feel like the colors don't quite pop as much as they should, especially when we see some explosions and stuff. It looks a little washed out. So not my favorite color work, but the line work, the storytelling, the choice of panels, and the panel layouts on the pages, Pierre Perez gets pretty innovative with the way he's throwing panels around and using diagonal panels and different shape panels rather than, you know, always going with a square or rectangle. So that's all done really, really well. And I do like the pacing, especially that Carla Pacheco gives. So, you know, her and Kelly Thompson between Captain Marvel and Spider-Woman, I was really impressed. I'm like, man, these ladies are killing it. So, you know, to that, those people out there that complain about, you know, women comic writers not being able to write good superhero comics, man, read these are great. I don't know what the heck you're talking about. And, you know, the fact that they're female characters, I don't think Marvel, you know, is like, oh, it's a female character, we got to put a female writer on it. You know, we've seen plenty of males write female characters over the years, so I don't think it's necessarily, you know, tokenism or anything like that. But these are just people that just are passionate about these characters, and they're doing a great job telling their stories and bringing them to life in very authentic voices. And yeah, like I said, I really enjoyed both of these books. So, all right, on to the last of the Marvel titles I'm going to talk about today. This is Maestro number 1 from writer Peter David. And this is 1 of 5, I believe. It's a 5-issue mini, and it's basically telling the origin of Maestro. And for those not familiar, Maestro is the older Hulk. He's the despotic ruler of this possible future in the Marvel Universe, and we never found out how that happened. There's a 2-issue prestige series by Peter David. I think the art was by Dale Keown, if I'm not mistaken. But it was called Future Imperfect, and it was a runaway hit, and the Hulk traveled to the future and fought against this Maestro, and then eventually learned that it was him. It was himself. He was this horrible, evil ruler, and we never found out, okay, what happened to take Bruce Banner the Hulk from a hero in our time to this evil ruler who, you know, was tyrannical and, you know, lacked empathy and didn't care about anybody but himself. And so Peter David, who, you know, had an epic long run on the Hulk back in the day, is getting a chance to come back and work on this. So this issue was great. So good. So let me go over the credits real quick. Peter David, as I said, the writer. Herman Peralta is the artist. Colors are by Jesus Arbatov. There's an opening scene here on the splash page or inside the front cover that's by Dale Keown. And the art on that is by Jason Keith. We have Ariana Maher on letters. And there's a bunch of different covers. We've got Dale Keown and Jason Keith. We've got Joe Bennett with Ryu Jose and Paul Mounts. We've got Ron Garney and Matt Milla. There's an Ed McGuinness and Laura Martin cover. And a George Perez and Jason Keith cover. And finally, a Ron Lim and Israel Silver, Silva cover. So a lot of really, really great people working on this book for sure. So I can't really say much about the story. You know, I didn't know what to expect, and I couldn't really talk about anything that happens because you go into it and you wonder, okay, what's going to happen? Like, where does it even start, right? Where do you even start to tell the tale? When does it start to change? When does the Hulk start turning bad? When does whatever happens start affecting Bruce Banner? And so the way that it starts, you do think it's going to be in one time period, and then it turns out it's not what you think. And so I felt like Peter David didn't miss a beat. He came, you know, picked up right where he left off when he was writing the Hulk. Love the voice that he gives the Hulk. It feels very authentic. And the art by Herman Peralta, I haven't heard of him before. Man, it is so good. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's my favorite Hulk artist ever. I think that still belongs to Dale Keown, and probably my second would be Gary Frank, or maybe they're interchangeable depending on my mood. But he could easily be right there in number three. It is kind of reminiscent of a Gary Frank style. So beautifully colored by Jesus Arbatov, really clean where it needs to be. And based on what I see in this issue, I would say that actually who I might want to see Herman Peralta draw even more than the Hulk is Thor. There's one panel of Thor that is just stunningly good, like so good. Like when I was reading it, I had to stop and just like, I gotta just look at Thor. I gotta just stare at Thor for a couple seconds because it's so good. So if you only pick up one title tomorrow, this is the book you have to pick up. This is my book of the week. It was so good. I wouldn't say it's fast-paced, but based on the way that Peter David sets it up, it does cover a good chunk of time, and it establishes just what went wrong or what we're about to see go wrong very well. So the last page, the last panel, is absolutely spectacular and is perfectly in tone with the Hulk we know from the Peter David run and with who he eventually becomes. Like, this is perfect, right? Like, this is Maestro issue 1 of 5, and when you see the last panel and you see what happens on the last page, you think, yep, he just took the first step down the path of becoming Maestro with what we see here. And it's perfectly understandable, and it makes sense, and it's reasonable. And you feel for the Hulk, you feel for Bruce Banner, and you feel like he still has a chance to turn away. He still has a chance to be a hero. You know, he just put one foot on that path. It doesn't mean he can't, you know, find a way off of it, find a way to redemption. We know that's not the case. He becomes Maestro, at least in this alternate version of Marvel, the Marvel future. But so in a way, it's going to be heartbreaking. And in a way, what I was struck with the most, and part of why it's my book of the week and why it feels so well crafted and so well done, is that as evil as the Maestro is, and as terrible as he is, and as much as you root against him in that Future Imperfect series, when you see here what's happened, and you start reading about it, you see it start playing out and start affecting Bruce Banner, you feel bad for him. Like, right now, in this first issue, I'm on his side. Like, I can see why he would choose this path. can see, you know, I feel bad for him. He's somewhat a victim of circumstance, and you can understand and you can empathize. And that's the best kind of storytelling, right? Like, okay, we know he's going to become the maestro, but I find myself wondering, am I going to root for him the whole way because I feel so bad for him? And I'm going to be on his side the whole time thinking, well, yeah, he didn't have a choice. He was forced into this, right? That is exceptional storytelling. You know, like part of me thought, okay, it's going to be some quick snap thing and Hulk's going to totally lose it and just, you know, it's going to be a quicker transformation of the maestro and it's going to be the people trying to stop him and we're going to see how he goes around and kills the heroes or whatever it might be. This is not at all what I expected. I was not expecting to be rooting for the Hulk, to be rooting for this transformation, this journey to seeing him become the maestro, right? So I probably won't be rooting for it to happen, but I'm along for the ride. I'm so invested already and I can't wait to see what happens. And I know I'm going to be suffering along with Bruce Banner, with the Hulk, as this transformation takes place, both understanding and empathizing with what he's going through and the decisions he's making. At the same time, you know, hoping against hope for him to turn away, which we know, again, we know that's not going to happen. We know this is the origin of him becoming the maestro. So I'm sure there are going to come times where we see him make decisions where we understand why he makes the decision he makes, but we're going to be sitting here reading going, no, just don't do that, because that's just another step down the path to becoming somebody who's not who you want to be. You know, it's the death by a thousand cuts. When you turn around and you're maestro and you turn around and look back, you can't point to any, well, it was at this moment I became maestro because it was so many little things based on circumstance. And that's what we're seeing here, what Peter David is showing us in this first issue. So this is one of the best comics I've read in a while. And again, you don't need to know anything that's going on in Marvel right now with Empire or any of the rest of the stuff. You don't even need to have read any of Peter David's run from back in the day. If you have, then great. You may get a little bit more out of this, especially the first few pages of this. If you've read Future Imperfect, you're going to know the end destination. But you don't even need to know anything about that. All you need to know is just pick up this book and read it, even if you've never read a Marvel comic before, and enjoy it, because it's something really, really special. And as I'm talking to you guys about it, I'm on the last page here looking at the last panel and just like shaking my head going, oh man, this is going to be a wild ride. It's going to be emotional and it's going to be devastating to see somebody who I really like, one of my favorite heroes, one of my favorite Marvel heroes, the Hulk, go through this terrible transformation. So book of the week, wasn't really any doubt. Didn't have any expectations necessarily. I was more curious than anything, and it totally blew me away. So good. All right, well, let me go ahead and talk about the last book that's coming out this week that I wanted to mention, and it's A Man Among Ye. It's written by Stephanie Phillips. We have art by Craig Cermak, colors by John Kalis, and letters by Troy Pateri. This is a Top Cow book from Image, and it's basically a fictional retelling of Anne Bonny, who's one of the, if not the most famous female pirate from the 1700s. And we get a little bit of Mary Read in here as well, who's another famous female pirate. So we don't really know that much about them, like in terms of historical accuracy. So this is Stephanie basically telling a pirate story about these female pirates. And it's really fun. And again, I don't know how much historical accuracy. I do know that Stephanie Phillips is her father is a historian, and she's herself is somewhat of a historian. She loves history, and she teaches. She's an academic, so it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of the things she's putting in here are historically accurate. But more than that, it's just fun. And it's fun to get a really badass woman like Stephanie Phillips, who used to, I think actually still plays ice hockey, but used to be a competitive Muay Thai fighter, to write these really take charge, don't mess with me kind of women, right? It's just a lot of fun. So the artwork is very good. The colors are, they very much suit kind of a historical tale here. A lot of the stuff takes place at night, a lot of the action and such. So it's a little bit of a darker palette. There are a few bright colors here and there, but for the most part, it's a darker palette. And it's just fun. It's fun to you know, talk like a pirate, and she's got the pirate lingo down. And I mean, who doesn't like to read stories about pirates, right? And just to throw in the added wrinkle that they're female here, and it just makes it fun. And you know, the other pirates aren't happy that there's a female pirate on board, you know, and so we know that that was the way it was back then. Should probably be the way it is now. And who knows, it very well may be. I'm not that familiar with 21st century pirates. I know they still exist, right? Somalia and all that kind of stuff. So, but I did want to mention it because I do think it's a really fun title. This is only the second issue. I think it's going to be either 4 or 6 issues. So, again, it's a lot of fun. The artwork, I wasn't familiar with Craig Cermak before I saw this, but his line work, he uses very fine lines. His line weights aren't real heavy, and it very much suits this, this type of story. It helps to make it feel light and fun. And his storytelling from panel to panel, he could use a little work. It's not terrible, but it's not the best I've seen. It doesn't feel choppy, but when he zooms in and out a lot. And while that can work sometimes, there are particular pages where it feels a little choppy to me. It never pulled me out of the story. It wasn't until I went back and did my kind of art read through or art review, if you will, that I even noticed it at all. So again, it's not something, and it's not always the case. There are some panel transitions that I think work really, really well. But there are just a few times where it doesn't flow quite as well as I might want it to. But again, I didn't notice it when I was reading. So it's a very minor quibble indeed. So I do enjoy it. I think it's a great title, a heck of a lot of fun, and I do recommend that you pick it up. I mean, at the very least, pick up a copy and thumb through it and see if it's something that you might want to check out, because I do think it's worth your time for sure. All right, well, let me go over some other titles that you might want to be on the lookout for today. Manny was supposed to join me, but I'm not exactly sure what happened, and he's really been loving Dead Day from Aftershock, and he was going to talk about issue 2. So that's out from Aftershock Comics today, as is Artemis and the Assassin number 4, which is another book by Stephanie Phillips, you know, the writer of A Man Among Ye, who I just talked about. And that one's also deals with history and time travel and such. Meanwhile, over at DC, Manny was supposed to talk about Batman number 97 as well. That's another Joker War tie-in. I'm behind on my Batman stuff, so I haven't had a chance to get caught up yet. Also, we have Aquaman at number 62 out today, as well as Dark Knight Death Metal Guidebook number 1. We also have Nightwing number 73, which is a Joker War tie-in as well. Over at Image, Gideon Falls number 24, which is one of the best comics out there. On stands today by Jeff Lemire with art by Andrea Sorrentino is out today. Over at Marvel, in addition to the books I talked about, Cable number 3 hits stands, as well as Empire X-Men number 4. We also have Thor number 6 from Donny Cates, and I mentioned that because I didn't get a preview copy of that, and I've heard it's because Marvel's, there's something that happens in Thor number 6 that Marvel's trying to make sure it doesn't leak. So you might want to, even if you don't read Thor, you might want to pick up a copy, because it might be one of those things where some momentous thing happens, or a new character or something like that. So I just wanted to mention that. And we also have Wolverine number 4 hitting stands today. Over at Valiant, Riot number 6, and there's a new number 1 from Vault called Shadow Service number 1. So those are a few of the books you might want to be on the lookout for at your local comic shop today. As always, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.